And good afternoon. Welcome to Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper's still away. We thank you for joining us. Today we examine Florida's guardianship system. Although Miami-Dade County, with 7,000 guardianship cases, currently has more than any county in the state, it has the least oversight, making it rife for guardianship fraud and abuse. The Miami New Times cover article this week points out systemic shortcomings that have enabled some particularly egregious examples. It was written by investigative journalist Michael E. Miller, who will be joining us in a while on the program. But in the studio, joining us now is retired physician and a board-certified specialist in internal medicine, Dr. Sam Sugar. He was in practice for four decades. He has direct experience with the abuses of Florida's probate guardianship system. And he's also the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us, Dr. Sugar.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure.
Also joining us is Lydia Abramovici. She was born in Venezuela, but has resided in the U.S. as an American citizen for over 40 years. Her mother, Perla, was born in Romania, and along with her father, fled to Venezuela after World War II. Lydia and her mother were both victims of probate guardianship abuses. Their case was cited in Michael Miller's New Times article. Welcome to you, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you to you, Annie.
Dr. Sugar, I'd like to start with you. I just like to begin with a basic description, a definition of a professional guardian. Who are they, and when are they, and why are they appointed?
Well, first of all, let's start with what a guardian is.
What is a guardian?
Yeah, a guardian is a court-appointed substitute decision maker that is required when an individual, or may be required, when an individual can no longer take care of themselves and make decisions about their own welfare, their investments, their decisions about everyday life. In Florida, our system allows for several different types of guardians. And when one has a guardian, one is referred to not by their name anymore, but as the ward. So a ward has a guardian, and a guardian literally owns a ward, which is something that's very amazing once you realize it. When we talk about guardians, there are several different types. The most common type is a family guardian, which is a family member who's been empowered by the court to take over the care of a loved one. Very nice, very nice. We also have public guardians through the Office of Public Guardianship in Tallahassee, who do the very important task of taking care of indigent people. Indigent people who have no means need a roof over the head and three squares a day, and those are the people who do a wonderful job. And then there's the third category of professional fee-for-service guardians. These are individuals who are appointed by the probate court to make their presence in the ward's life and to control literally the decisions that are part of the ward's life. They own the ward. They own that person and are responsible for making every decision about that person's rights, because the ward's rights, and this is really important, a ward has no rights.
We're going to get to that.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to definitely get to that.
So that's what guardians do.
Who determines who needs guardianship? What basis is that determination made?
The determination about whether a guardianship is appropriate is initiated by a request by an individual. It can be anybody. Certainly it can be a family member, but anyone can approach the court through an attorney to request what's called an incapacity hearing, at which point the judge, the court, is required to make a determination as to whether or not the individual in question does have an incapacity.
So the judge makes that decision, not a doctor?
The judge makes the decision in consort with a group of people called the examining committee, three people of varying professional backgrounds who are charged with advising the judge. The three don't make the decision. They give advice to the judge, and that informs the judge decision.
Are they psychiatrists, psychologists, MDs? What are they?
Well, that's part of our issue. The composition of the three-member examining committee varies from area to area in Florida. By statute 744, which we talk about a lot, the statute requires that at least one of the people examining the proposed ward, or as it's called, the alleged incapacitated person, be a physician. But there's tremendous leeway throughout the state about who is and isn't available to that committee. We know of situations in certain counties in Florida where a highway patrolman was put in a position of making a determination of incapacity with zero background in health care or mental health. And so the standards vary tremendously between county and county and are unpredictable in that respect.
Okay, before we get to Lydia, and we will, bear with me, and thanks for your patience. Let's just turn to the guardian, these professional guardians. How does one qualify to become one? What is their education? What are the requirements?
It's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked it. One of the things that surprises the uninformed, the uninitiated, is that a guardian who can be charged with running a multi-million dollar estate as a complete stranger to the estate are not licensed in the state of Florida. They are not certified by anyone, and they are rarely supervised even by the court they report to. Basically, these are people who have spent a few hundred dollars to take a 40-hour internet-based course, and that's all you need to become a guardian. Stunned silence.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, it doesn't work on the radio very well. Okay. All right. So now we've established that. Lydia, you were born in Venezuela. You've resided here for 40 years. Your mother, Perla Brief de Bramovici, am I pronouncing it right?
Yes.
Although not an American citizen, nor had she had property in the U.S., was assigned a private guardian based on your sister's request to have her declared incapacitated. Do you know why your sister had her when she was visiting the United States? She was just on vacation, right?
Right.
And do you have any reason or any knowledge of why your sister had her declared incapacitated?
Yes, definitely. I have my reasons to say why she went ahead and wanted to get my mother in the guardianship. But I really cannot speak for the actions of other people. And what I feel that my sister, also from Venezuela, got the wrong advice from her friends. Okay. The only thing I can tell you that my mother was here visiting and my sister, her husband, left my mother with one suitcase at my house and a letter saying there was no room in their house for my mother anymore and that they cannot have her in Venezuela anymore, and it was my responsibility.
Okay. Although she had no property in the U.S., although she was not a United States citizen, a guardian was appointed. What legal structure allows a judge to appoint a guardian for a non-U.S. citizen? Do you know?
The judge didn't have any jurisdiction over my mother. She didn't have a jurisdiction over her property, but she went ahead and she ruled to have a limited guardianship. My mother had the right to travel, to decide her residency, to work, but not to take care of her money, to marry, and her social environment. After she was in the guardianship, her attorney told us to leave the country because they didn't have jurisdiction over her. And for a year and a half, we went to Panama. And this is what the judge, she ruled against the law, because she ordered my mother to come back to the United States. And only a federal judge can do that in a case of a criminal. And my mother was not a criminal. And she came to the United States. She went to court and she told the judge that she didn't want to be here. She had her plot next to my father in Venezuela and she wanted to die there. They kept my mother here as an illegal immigrant, and her visa expired. And as you can see, everybody is not accepted in the United States. So many rules,
right,
that they kept my mother, an elderly in the United States, against the law because she had the money.
And if I could just jump in.
Yes, please do.
The story that Lydia is telling is a little unusual. In fact, it's very unusual because her mother wasn't a United States citizen. But it points out the reality of the laws that are ignored in this rush for greed-based control. The Older Americans Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the mandatory reporting laws, the Adult Protective Services laws, and even our own guardianship statutes in the state of Florida are routinely ignored. And Perhaps the most egregious part of this is that people who are responsible, people who have taken steps to have their wishes followed after they can no longer make their own decisions, those advance directives, which are such a critical aspect of our freedoms and our freedom of choice, are routinely overturned, ignored, and violated in these types of courts. And that's what surprised all of us who have been involved in these courts.
How can that be that these advance directives are ignored? Aren't those, I mean, if you're a healthcare proxy, if you have power of attorney, if you have a do not resuscitate order, we were just hearing that on Fresh Air, how can those orders be ignored by this system?
Well, this industry, I really prefer to call it an industry that has a lot of very powerful stakeholders, is tremendously incentive to develop cases in court which can then be litigated. The majority of the money of the estates that are drained don't necessarily go to the guardians, but to the lawyers for the guardians. Mm. This is an extremely lucrative industry. And it's the incentives to be involved in this industry, and I'll just mention one. 70% of the nation's wealth, about $11 trillion, resides in the possession of baby boomers and the older. Now, for people who are conscience-based and who really have respect for the rights of individuals would never dream of trying to usurp that. But in the rush to guardianship, there is a peculiar way that judges and courts and lawyers who are very bright can find their way to take these estates. The people in this victimhood group call it litigate, mitigate, medicate, isolate, and take the estate.
We're speaking about the guardianship system here mostly. We're focusing on Florida today and actually the South Florida with Dr. Sam Sugar. He's a retired board certified specialist in internal medicine. He's the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. And we're speaking with Lydia Abramovici, who is a victim of the system and an activist in this area. We're going to take a short break on Topical Currents. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Michael Miller. So please stay with us. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. We are talking about Florida's guardianship system, probate guardianship system, with Dr. Sam Sugar, who's a retired physician and the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. Also in the studio is Lydia Abramovici, and she was written up in an article by Michael Miller in the New Times this week and an activist in this area. And joining us now is award-winning investigative journalist and New Times senior writer Michael Miller. He did write the cover article in this week's Miami New Times, Who's Watching the Guardians? Sometimes the Protectors Turn Predator. Michael, welcome to Topical Currents.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate your time. You speak of a five-month New Times investigation of this guardianship system, and it entailed reviewing thousands of pages of guardian files. What was your role in the investigation, and what prompted it?
Well, first of all, I mean, it was prompted by people like Lydia, like Dr. Sugar, coming forward and contacting me and saying, hey, we think there's a really serious problem here. A lot of the people who contacted me were people who, like Lydia, have had family members kind of lost into this Kafkaesque court system, and they don't really know what to do. They feel extremely frustrated. So, you know, I heard from enough people where I thought, that there must really be a problem here. And I started looking into it, and I realized that, especially in some counties like Miami-Dade, things really haven't progressed at all. Things haven't been improved or better monitored in the past 25 years since there were a lot of serious problems back in the 80s and early 90s with guardianship abuse. So I thought it was, about time that somebody took another look at this, and that's why I spent 5 months or so kind of sorting through what's a complicated issue to try to boil it down to something that somebody who's not involved in guardianship could understand.
You relate some harrowing cases in your article, in addition to Lydia's, that of Lacey Waters, that of Barbara Stone. Could you talk a little bit about Barbara Stone? Because it illustrates how a daughter is charged with a felony for helping her mother. Could you talk succinctly about her case?
Yeah, I think, Dr. Sugar kind of laid out the process by which this happens. And so you could have a daughter like Barbara Stone, who had, an elderly a mother, maybe 85 years old or so, who had kind of the onset of dementia. And what happens is that in guardianship cases, there's often some type of dispute between children, whether it's over how to best take care of their mother or father, or what to do with assets, or who gets who what. But as soon as there's kind of this seed of division there, all it takes is one person, whether it's one of the siblings or somebody else outside, to file a petition for guardianship, and suddenly the mother or father can actually be taken away, literally, from a sibling who's taken care of them, a daughter or a son who's taken care of them for the past 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So in Barbara's case, she and her brother were, her brother was taking care of their mother, and Barbara didn't think that her mother was getting adequate health care. So she actually filed the petition for guardianship herself. And, she almost immediately regretted it because she felt like the professional guardians put in charge of her mother's life were far worse than what was happening before. And so she makes allegations of really kind of serious neglect, and she says that her mother nearly died under the care of a particular guardian. And so she basically didn't have any rights, really, because as Dr. Sugar said, the guardian has almost complete control over the ward. And so there were very strict parameters under which Barbara could see her mother. She could only visit her between certain hours of the day. She decided eventually, she kind of snapped and said she wasn't going to take it anymore. And she was so worried about her mother that she ended up taking her out of this kind of nursing home recovery facility. She put her in a wheelchair and she took her out to lunch because her mother hadn't eaten solid food in weeks, and she took her to a hotel where she felt she was going to kind of save her mother from this abuse. And instead, because she didn't have a right to do any of that under this guardianship system, she was arrested and charged basically with kidnapping her own mother.
What happens, what in the legal system takes the rights away from the other family member, in this case from the other daughter? Why is she, I understand the ward is stripped of their rights. Why is the other person stripped of their rights?
Basically it's up to a judge. Maybe Dr. Sugar or Lydia can step in here and describe it as well, but it seems the judge kind of sets the parameters because basically, you have to, it's a bit of a mind shift you have to kind of contemplate, but this ward, this usually elderly person, is basically no longer a person. They are under the control of a guardian, and so it's up to the guardian completely what happens to them, who they can see. Mm. So even if the elderly person says, I want to see my daughter, it's not really up to them, and so the guardian and in consultation with the guardian, the judge can decide who they see, what treatment they get, what happens with their money. And so, as you can imagine, this drives a lot of family members crazy. They have spent their entire lives being able to visit their mother or father and see them, and now they're sick and often dying, and all they want to do is go to their bedside and talk to them. And see how they're doing. And in a lot of cases, they're basically barred from doing that. And it's kind of heartbreaking. They don't know. In Barbara's case, she doesn't know where her mother is to this day. She doesn't know, what nursing home she's in, or even her health status. She doesn't know how close to death she is, and she's afraid that she might never see her mother again.
Right.
You wanted to add something.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in and say the case that's under discussion is a particularly egregious one, but it is only one of hundreds of cases that we are involved with and investigating and reporting. It's very easy to do this. It's very easy for a person to get into this field of taking the rights of another person. Michael has described the egregious nature of literally kidnapping into slavery an elderly, defenseless person. Now, I recognize there may be other ways to look at this. If you're an attorney who's looking at this as a source of revenue, this is a wonderful system because the litigation that people who love their parents will go through is endless, and that litigation in an adversary system can be very profitable for lawyers on both sides. Our problem has been that we have yet, even though we have been speaking for our organization, been to every aspect, every agency in the state, we have been unable to find an agency willing to investigate all of these things.
I just want to, at this point, we haven't opened the phones yet because there's so much to talk about, but since you're all here right now, we have a guardian from Plantation on the phone to get his point of view. Could we do that right now? Stephen, welcome to Topical Currents.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'm having some difficulty getting my head wrapped around where Dr. Sugar and Mr. Miller are coming from here, because the cases that they are talking about are so rare and so unlike anything that I have had in my practice. And I've read Mr. Miller's article, and I have noted the names that he has cited in that article for the professional guardians and the people who are involved in these cases. And what I'm seeing in this situation is a complete mischaracterization of the profession of guardianship. First off, let's understand one thing. The vast majority of people who are placed under guardianship are under the guardianship of family members. Somebody in the family agrees that they will take care of their loved one and take care of the issues that they need to go through the balance of their life and into their passing. The issue of fraud under guardianship is 99% among family members. It is not among professional guardians. The issues that these guys are talking about in the area of professional guardianship should probably be more adequately characterized as pre-mortem will contests. These are people who have an interest in their family members' assets and money. They are not primarily concerned with the care of their loved ones. If they were, there wouldn't be family disputes over who and what and is going to be taking care of their loved ones.
Okay, Stephen, let's get a little reaction to what you've said thus far, okay?
Well, thank you for calling in. The very statements that you're making emphasize how important it is to have this discussion. The very fact that even the elder law branch of the Florida Bar Association has said publicly that there are problems with this system. There may not be more than a few hundred or a thousand or more. It doesn't matter. What we are seeing, and perhaps you have not been exposed to, but what we have been presenting to law enforcement at various levels of the state is egregious examples of precisely what we're discussing. And while I completely understand why a guardian would want to rebut them, the fact is that independent observers like Michael Miller, who has no axe to grind here at all, have really shown that there are serious problems, systemic problems, and the fact that we have presented to law enforcement cases in practically half of the counties in this state show that there is a problem and that it cannot be pushed under the rug any longer.
Michael, can you respond to Stephen?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, thanks for calling, because I think it's very important to get a guardian's viewpoint on this. You know, first of all, Stephen is right in terms that most guardianships are certainly family guardianships. I do mention them in my article, although I focus more on the professional guardians. I would say that I think it's unfair. I mean, having gone through all of these cases and talked to, you know, dozens of victims, I do not think that you can simply say that anyone who ends up in this type of guardianship as a son or daughter is more interested in the money than their father or mother's health. I think that's clearly not true from a lot of these cases. Certainly there's a lot of money involved, but there's people's lives on the line here. And I will say in Stephen's defense, you know, that certainly guardians often play, in my opinion, a very useful role. I mean, I think they just need to be better monitored. So you do have people who are clearly incapacitated with dementia or Alzheimer's, and oftentimes if there's no family member or if the family members can't figure things out, then perhaps a guardian does need to be put in place to protect them from abuse. That's what guardians are supposed to do. They're supposed to protect people with dementia who can't take care of themselves from people who might prey on their estates, you know, a neighbor who might try to become, you know.
Well, if I might.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The state of Florida, in fact, is among the very few in the entire country that does have a formal system of regulation and oversight of professional guardians. And Broward County, where I practice, has been the place where that pretty much started. And I commend Michael for his part in there where he was talking about the guardianship monitor. Robert Toomey is a wonderful person. And in Broward County, we don't get away with anything.
That's exactly right. And in speaking to Robert Toomey on multiple occasions, Robert has told me how proud he is that Broward is no longer the hot spot for guardianship abuse. And that proves our point perfectly. When monitoring and systemic evaluations are in place to allow people who have complaints to have somewhere to go, the problem in Broward County, because of one particular judge who made it his business to eliminate this problem, what we're saying is Broward County could serve as a model, but in all the other counties except one or two in this state, there is no such mechanism. And the problem that our group has had is that we haven't been able to find anyone who is willing to even listen to our complaints.
Well, I would suggest to you then that the persons that you need to speak to at the top end of this situation are your state legislators, because they are the ones who have been reducing the budgets that provide the personnel and the staffing and the systems to be able to put in place the type of monitoring that you're actually looking to establish in all of the counties.
I believe, Stephen, that there was some legislation that did just pass then some that didn't. Go ahead.
Underfunded
and incomplete.
Right. And the reason that the bill that was proposed by Brandis and Pasadomo actually finally wound up getting passed is because it was watered down by the forces in the guardianship industry who don't want regulation.
No, in fact, it wasn't the guardianship industry. In fact, our guardianship industry was supportive of most of the legislation.
Most of it.
And would have been very happy to accommodate the situation. We are not looking for that kind of business. There is no real money in guardianship litigation, except in situations where, as I was originally saying, we're talking about pre-mortem will contests, where the people involved have large amounts of money that are at risk, and they are incompetent to manage that money for themselves. And there are members of the family who are coming in there from different angles and are looking to do whatever it is in their own personal interests that are secondary to the
right.
interest.
Okay. And that is the typical response from people on who oppose what we're doing. But let me say just this.
Stephen, also, I'm going to have to let you go because we have so many other callers. But we are so appreciative that you took the time and joined in this conversation. If you can take the rest of it off the air, though, okay?
Thank you so much
for having me. Thank you.
What we have heard time and again is, oh, these people are just losers in court, and they're greedy, and all they want is their inheritance. I would submit that it isn't necessary to abuse, isolate, over-medicate, and torture an elderly person because the rightful heirs want to get what's rightfully theirs. It isn't the money that we're talking about. Our big concern is the way that these wards are abused. Not always, maybe not even in the majority.
I'm sure there are some, I mean, I was going to ask you that. There are some good guardians
Absolutely.
That do exactly what, so we're not saying that the entire, what we're saying the system is broken.
System's broken, and just like our society in general, our society is made up primarily of wonderful people who are conscience-based and who do the right thing. But there is an element within our society that is not. And we are concerned that every individual, especially with the baby boomers graying, we know for a fact the demographics show that there's going to be a lot of people who are demented and who need help. We need to assure everyone who wants to be in Florida that it's safe to come to Florida, that they won't be subjected to this kind of abuse that we have borne witness to.
Mike, Bonnie, yeah, if yes. I can jump in just for a second.
Yes, please.
I'm very glad that Stephen called because I think, you know, his points, a lot of them were excellent, and it really brings up kind of the crux of the issue, which is that it really comes down to the character of an individual guardian. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is really troubling here is that guardians are invested with so much power and they're hardly monitored at all in certain counties that really it's you could have 99% of guardians be excellent people who are certainly devoted to the well-being of their wards, but it only takes one or two bad guardians who handle a dozen or two dozen cases a year to create some serious abuse. And it's not like Dr. Sugar is making this up. There have been clear examples of guardians, professional guardians, doing just that, of basically letting their wards die because they are more interested in their money. That happened before Bob Toomey took over in Broward. And, you know, also, and just in the last two or three years in Palm Beach County, the county clerk there, Sharon Bach, she's basically made this her obsession, and she's gone after guardianship fraud, whether it's family guardians or professional guardians. And just in two or three years, she's caught $3 million worth of suspect activity. So, I mean, really, if you take a step back, I mean, we're talking about $500 million in Palm Beach County, and Miami-Dade has twice as many guardianship cases. So perhaps $1 billion worth of assets, and all it takes is a few bad actors to really abuse that system and take a lot of that money. And right now, there's just hardly any monitoring going on in Miami-Dade. So,
what will it take to get an independent watchdog in Miami-Dade to judge these claims of abuse? I mean, what's it going to take?
I think that's a great question. I mean, we mentioned a couple of bills that were passed this legislative session by Kathleen Pasadomo, and you know, I congratulate her. She did, I think, her best. And one of them is very important in the sense that it basically authorizes county clerks, empowers them all around the state to do what clerks in Palm Beach and Broward are already doing, which is truly investigate guardianship cases. So right now in Miami-Dade County, it's basically a rubber stamp from the judge when a guardian says, I'm spending this amount of money on this and this for the ward. It's almost always simply approved. And we're talking, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 at a time, which adds up to hundreds of thousands of dollars over the case of a guardianship. And nobody is really scrutinizing that to say, did that money actually go towards what it went, what you said? Were these checks truly destined for these people? And, you know, what I think it really needs, because Kathleen Pasadomo's legislation was the first step, but as Stephen, the Guardian, pointed out, it's really a question of resources and funding and hiring people who will go through these cases and really scrutinize them. And I think I'm really glad that he called, because, you know, here's a guardian basically saying that that's what we need, is we need more supervision, we need more money devoted to monitoring counties, especially large counties like Miami-Dade. And Kathleen Pasadomo's bill is a great first step, but it's basically unfunded. And so, you know, by my estimate, it would take at least $5 million to really hire the people all around the state that we would need to make sure that cases like Lydia's never happen again.
Now, you mentioned Harvey Reuven's office, the county clerk, in your article. We do have a caller, Pierre from Homestead, who wants to ask you something about that. Let me take that call. Pierre, you're on Topical Currents. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, so my question actually is pretty simple. Our county clerk's budget is pretty big. We spend over $300,000 just in advertising, $10,000 in travel, almost $3 million in fringe benefits. So now, we're saying that in Florida, to get a statewide watchdog program, it will cost about $5 million. So just Miami-Dade would be a fraction of that cost. So, in other words, Palm Beach found a way to fix the problem, Broward fixed the problem, but our county clerk can't find the money to do that. What do you think about that?
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, you know, Kathleen Pasadomo's legislation is a step towards that, but clearly counties like Broward and Palm Beach have already taken steps themselves to unilaterally go after guardianship abuse and fraud. And that's something that I think Miami-Dade could do a lot better job of. Basically, when I asked the county clerk's office, when I asked guardians here in Miami-Dade, the response was, we have an excellent system, and that's why there are no cases of guardianship fraud here, which I think simply, you know, defies belief that you have, you know, dozens of guardians who've been caught committing fraud in much smaller counties, and here is Miami-Dade with 7,000 guardianship cases, and there's no evidence of a guardian ever committing fraud. I think that's really points towards a lack of monitoring, a lack of investigating these cases, rather than, you know, simply that the county is miraculously clean of any type of abuse.
And I think it points to a perception. Our perception as perceived victims of this is that there's a big problem. But the officials who are in charge of the probate court and of the clerk of the courts in our area really may be, at least they claim, not to be aware of any of these abuses. We're here to try to change that perception by dint of our own very serious and egregious experience. It's impossible to deny that there have been lots of cases all throughout the state, and Miami-Dade is not spared from that, where there have been serious abuses. We want the public who listens to our voice right now to understand that if you live in these areas, there is a danger to you. The danger is that every one of us, everybody who owns anything in the state of Florida, whether it's a house or a car or jewelry or a bank account, will come into the probate court system. It's inevitable because the probate court deals with the transfer of ownership of property when someone goes away. And if there are problems in probate court, we need to solve them now before the silver tsunami hits us again.
If you can all stay with us, we do have to take a short break on today's Topical Currents. Pierre, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
We are speaking about the guardianship system in Florida with Dr. Sam Sugar, who's the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. We are also joined by Lydia Abramovici, who is a victim of abuse of the system, and investigative journalist and New Times senior writer Michael Miller. If you could all stay with us, we'll take that break and we'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. It's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. We're examining Florida's guardianship system with Dr. Sam Sugar, the founder of Americans Against abusive probate guardianship, and Lydia Abramovici, who was a victim of abuse of the system, and also New Times senior writer Michael Miller. Michael, I want to ask about something you wrote in the article about judges. You said that there are reasons to be concerned, particularly in Miami-Dade County, where judges have taken thousands of dollars from the guardians who depend on them for a living, and where filing systems and supposed safeguards are outdated and barely used. First, I'd like to ask, how are these judges able to take this money? Are you saying that they're getting kickbacks from the guardians that they appoint?
No, this would be campaign donations. So when judges are elected or up for election, they obviously take money from a wide variety of people. But what happens is it's a very small, despite the number of cases here in Miami-Dade, there's only, I think, four probate judges who handle these guardianship cases. So it's a very small circuit. They often see the same professional guardians over and over and over again and give them cases and award them fees. But what happens is these guardians, they get to know the judges quite well. It's very kind of a chummy system, and they donate money to the judges, often to the judges' election campaigns. And so whether or not there is a real conflict of interest there, I would say certainly there is, mm-hmm. but judges claim that there's not. Whether or not there is a conflict of interest, certainly it makes the family suspicious, because you might have a family member like Lydia who is involved in this guardianship case, who wants to get her mother out, and then you might have the guardian for her case who she is kind of in conflict with in court, and yet the guardian has a close relationship already with the judge, donates money to the judge. The guardian's attorneys often donate money to the judge. So it's very easy for a family member like Lydia to feel like the system is really set against them and nobody's listening to them.
And Lydia, you wanted to add something. Please go ahead.
Yes. What I have learned is that people should be more active in the local elections, even more so than presidential elections, because most of the laws that affect our everyday lives stem from those local elections and not as much from presidential races. That what it means is when we have local elections, people have to be learn more who are the judges that they are going to be electing. Mm-hmm. In the case of my judge, Judge Corvick, she ran unopposed and she was again on the bench. And not only that, that she will continue even when she, that because by law, when she retires, she will continue.
What do you mean she'll continue after she retires?
By law, the judges can stay on the bench as
long. Oh, I see.
Because she's a senior judge.
Right.
If I could just jump in for a moment, I wanted to focus this a little bit more. What we have found over our years in these battles is, it's very easy to do this. It's very easy to affect the civil rights of an innocent person who's committed no crime. It sounds to people who are uninitiated like there might even be conspiratorial issues here. There is deceptive allegations brought to these judges. We're talking about judges. Judges have a tough call here because they're human beings too, and the law requires them to listen to allegations. But there is an unfair advantage with the people who are bringing these allegations because, A, when an incapacity hearing starts, there's little or no notice to the people who oppose it. And the people who are bringing these—
You mean they're not given advance notice? That
a
this
day or two.
Okay, so if they're out of town or whatever.
Or if they don't have a lawyer yet, there's really no time to prepare.
Okay.
Catches you off guard.
Right.
We're concerned about due process. We're concerned about transparency. And to address those, we brought legislation to the legislature. We worked really hard for Senate Bill 412 and House Bill 1157, which never had a chance. Now, we know that grassroots organizations don't get bills passed in Florida on the first try. But what we're hoping to do by raising awareness about this is to get the public interested, because they have their own interests in this. They will be in probate court someday. There's no question about that. And if they are taking care of an elderly person, we want to make sure that all the people who want to move to Florida for their golden years are safe. That's what we thought our parents were. It didn't turn out that way.
We didn't even talk about your story with your mother-in-law.
Right. I think we've made the point.
How can we avoid getting stuck in this situation? I'd like for all of you to weigh in on this since we're closing in on the end of the show. Michael Miller, do you have any thing to say about that, how this can be avoided?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. I mean, I would like to say that it's as simple as, you know, avoiding family disputes, but it's not that simple because, as Dr. Sugar and Lydia pointed out, oftentimes these things are started by somebody who's not even a family member. It could be a lawyer. It could be, in the case of Lacey Waters, who I write about, it's the company that she worked for that files for this guardianship and this incapacity hearing. So, you know, it's not really as simple, and, you know, it sounds a little alarmist, but there is very little way to avoid this other than doing the best to have your affairs in order, as, you know, kind of lock tight as you can make your legal documents before anything happens to you. And hopefully, you know, we can reform the system to make it more transparent and to crack down on cases of abuse so people can trust the guardianship system, because as the caller earlier pointed out, most guardians are, you know, not in it for the money. They're trying to do a noble thing and protect somebody who's vulnerable, but it really just takes a few bad actors, which we've seen all over the state and all over the country, to really ruin somebody's life and take all their money. So it's going to be a long slog before we...
Is one thing I'd like to just jump in, and on our website, aaapg.net...
We'll have a link to aaapg.net on our website.
There is a template for professional physicians, psychiatrists, and others to fill out that allows the court to see that on a date certain an individual was capacitated, because the way these rules are sidestepped, the way that the advance directives are sidestepped, is that someone claims that the person was incapacitated years before when they made the advance directives. This is one concrete way, and I urge the listeners to look at that. If they have any questions, they can contact us on the website. It is one way to try to avoid this.
Okay, and Lydia...
Yes, it is my personal opinion that the answer to all this is to have cap on the fees of the attorneys in guardianship. This way, the greed from the attorneys and the guardians will stop depleting the states and will concentrate better what to do for the wards, how to treat them, what is the best for them. And many legislators agree with this situation, which will be very difficult to pass, is the same situation as in the malpractice in the health.
Let me just ask one final question. Just can be like a few seconds. Who determines how much the attorneys and the guardians get? How is that determined? And who determines it?
It's really very simple. Whatever they ask for, they get.
I see.
The hourly rates for guardians are a lot less than for attorneys. Attorneys' rates can vary from $500 to $900 an hour, and there's a lot of hours involved. But guardians can do things like charge $75 to open your mail every day, which I happen to be personally familiar with. It's a difficult problem, and the judge is required to review these things. There are a lot of reasons why this goes unnoticed, but... what we need is oversight.
Yeah, obviously. Well, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you. Lydia, did you want to say something?
Yes. In my case, we dispute the fees. And even disputing the fees, the judge said, okay, let's bring an expert, which was extra.
Well, I want to thank Lydia Abramovici. For being with us today. Dr. Sam Sugar, that website, we will have a link to it, aaapg.net. And Michael Miller is a senior writer at Miami New Times. Thank you so much for being with us, for your time, and for an important discussion.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's Topical Currents. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Thanks to Peter J. Meritz for additional assistance. Free audio archives and downloads at WLRN.org, and more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow, we'll rebroadcast an interview with journalist and author Eyal Press. Bonnie Berman, thanking you for spending your afternoon with us. Please stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.